Hello and welcome back to the preview show or the year in review. I'm delighted to be joined by Michael Valgren of EF Education Nipple tonight. Michael, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. Just returning from a good off season, so trying to get back into it and get ready for the new season already, you know.
And where in the world do we find you tonight?
I'm back in Monaco, back in Monte Carlo. Been here for 5 days after my holiday to Portugal. Small trip to Denmark to see the family. And so now I'm back in Côte d'Azur.
Lovely. Okay, so we're going to look back at this season, 2021. But I think for me, I'm going to start just slightly earlier, which was the Vuelta of 2020, where you seem to find some legs. So you did very well, I think, on the Formigal stage. You were fifth amongst some pretty serious mountain climbers. Leaving that Vuelta, did it feel like you were kind of on top of things, getting good legs again?
Oh, yeah, it's only a year ago, isn't it? a few days ago. But it still seems so long ago, to be honest. I had good legs in the Vuelta, but I was still uncertain where I was going to go because I hadn't signed with EF yet. I only signed after the Vuelta with EF, so I was like, where do my good legs go now, you know? So, yeah, luckily EF, they wanted me, and it's been a really good match. And then, yeah, I've been trying to do my best this year to show that I have those legs I had in the Vuelta, and they also came along in some of the last races of this year, you know? So, yeah, I'm super happy to be in this team, you know? Like, they really understand me, so that's really great.
How did it feel racing the Vuelta with your contract not certain?
Well, it was not nice, to be honest. Like, I knew for a while that Dimension wouldn't continue, or NTT. So I was trying to find new teams, but I was trying to stay calm for my wife's sake, you know. But deep inside, it was horrible. Plus, I didn't even want to be at the Vuelta. So it was like... But at the same time, it gave me opportunity to show myself. So I'm lucky and happy that I went. And I had an idea that EF might wanted to sign me. But, you know, I also had to figure out the contract and numbers, if I could still afford to live in Monaco and stuff like that. Should I move back home to Denmark and things like that. So, yeah, it was just a weird time, also with the whole COVID thing still, like, how long was this COVID thing gonna be around for? And it was special for sure.
I think that's something people don't often think about, the impact of, you just mentioned there, will we be able to still live in Monaco? I mean, that must have been quite a stressful short period, hopefully, for you.
Yeah, definitely. Like, now we have a base here. We've been here for 5 years now. And we're like, well, should we move home? Or just do one more year where we just, you know, make even and try 2021 to be like a new build-up year where I can get back on good legs, good contract, you know, and stuff like that, and keep living down here because we like it. We have so many good friends. So we're not ready to move home, but it has to, you know, make sense. Like, you can't spend money you don't earn, you know. So it was quite stressful, especially for my family. Like, because I can be a bike rider more or less anywhere I want to be. I could even live in Scotland, I think, you know. I just go on more training camps. You know what I mean? Like, so, but yeah. So it was for sure super stressful, but I had all my doubt was, and I had no doubt in my managers they would find me a contract. So at some point I was like, shit, this is it's bad. But at the same time, I was pretty secure still, but I thought I had a good name in cycling, you know. So I always find something. Yeah.
You mentioned there the team EF, it's a good fit for you. I've heard from a few riders that the team is really good, and maybe sometimes it feels a little different compared to some other teams. What is it about EF that works for you?
I think the people there just understands me. Like all our DSs are absolutely amazing. They have people's person. Like, they listen to you when you talk. They're not just, they don't just think that we are robots, you know? Like, they actually listen to us when we have an issue or what we want to be better at or what we want to do. And then, of course, they try to make it work. It can't always make everyone happy, but I really feel like they listen to you. They make sure we have fun. They make sure that we go after each goal we have. And if we fail, we just stand up again and try again. Like, we don't stay, like, being negative if something is going bad. We just try to talk about it and then move on and then, like, stay positive. And that just makes the whole environment so great. Like, it's never, like, anyone that's angry or unhappy because of something happened like a month ago, because we talk about it, we move on, and then we become better. And I think that's just one of the key things, because the base of the team is just so good. Like, the staff is amazing. And then that makes us riders just ride a bike, which is pretty easy. And we have a good relationship together. We have fun. So, yeah, it's just a good team, to be honest.
So going back to the start of this season, winter training, how did you feel like when you were just about to start the season? Did winter go well?
Yeah, it actually went really well. Also because, well, just finished so late. I had a short off season. So when I started again already 1st December, I was already feeling I was in pretty good shape. So I was actually really ready to go full on in the first few races. But yeah, then I crashed in my first race and broke two fingers in my left hand, and I was like out for a good seven weeks maybe. So it was a bit of a shit start because I had a really good winter for once. I was really ready to go and go for some result, you know. So it was pretty hard for me to have this injury, new team, you know, only signed 1 year contract. So I was like, not again, you know. So it was a tough start, to be honest.
So that was, I think it was second stage in Bessèges, wasn't it? You crashed. So then you take, you said, like 6-7 weeks off, and you come straight back into Milan San Remo. Then you go to Catalonia to try and build some form, build some legs before Flanders. So did you feel like you left Catalonia ready for Flanders, or were you still underprepared because of your crash?
I think actually I was pretty good prepared, to be honest, because I did some really good training on the home trainers, like double session, stuff like that. And I got better and better in Catalonia. And like, for once, I was actually in the front when we hit Quartermont the second time in Flanders. But I was pretty unlucky. My front wheel came off on the Quartermont. So I was like in top 10, and all of a sudden my front wheel just fell off and I crashed in top 10 position. So that was the end of my race. Broke my bike, never got back. And yeah, luckily I didn't hurt myself, but it was just crazy. I could just see like the quick release start to come off or come loose. Before I knew anything, the wheel just was out. Me over the bike, on the cobbles.
How far up the Quartermont were you?
Just over the hard bit when you start to flatten out. It was basically just before like Yves Lampard he attacked. It happened. So yeah, I was good position, ready to be in the race, you know. Like, that was hard mentally because I knew maybe I wasn't 100% ready to be in the final, but it would have been nice to see how far I could have gotten, you know, because it's just a fucking nice race, isn't it? And to be the front of Quartermont the second time, that's where it starts, before Padersburg, and if you go to Koppenberg and Maria Borderstrad and all this, you know. So, like, it would have been nice to try. But yeah, there was another bump on the road in my spring, to be honest.
What's the... You speak very fondly of Flanders, and obviously, as a fan, I love it. What is it about the race that just stands out from basically every other race in the calendar?
Like, for people who don't know cycling but maybe watch the Worlds, That's like the sense you get in Tour Flanders. That's just this atmosphere. The people there, like the Belgians, they're crazy. You know, when you go up the Quadamont with this huge crowd, it's like, I think the closest you get to coming into like a football stadium or a handball stadium where everybody's just shouting or like going crazy with like too many beers and stuff like that. It's just something you never see in any other race, basically. Maybe at Basque, they also do it, but the Flanders is just, it's just different. The atmosphere, the build up to it, you know, the whole week up to it, and the newspapers and stuff like that. It's just for me the best race of the year.
And then you go to Amstel Gold, but it wasn't Amstel Gold as we know it. You know, it was.
No.
I know they did their best, the organisers, and at least there was a race, but, you know, it didn't feel right, did it?
For sure, it was not like what we used to. I think I was just happy that I could race it. Like, Amstel is one of my favourite races as well. So, and yeah, like you say, it wasn't the real Amstel goal, but like, that it's just how it is. Like with the whole Corona situation that was back in the Netherlands back then. So yeah, I'm happy we did it. Not happy with my performance. I was kind of happy, but yeah, it was a race. We just did laps, and I'm normally really good at that because it reminds me kind of like the Worlds. You race a bit like less aggressively. But the thing was, this race was like shorter than usual, so it became more aggressively than you're used to actually in an Amstel Gold. So yeah, it was good to do for sure.
So I think you were 13th. So yeah, your start of the season has been interrupted. You've crashed on day two. You've grown some form in Catalonia. You're going quite well in Flanders. You have bad luck. Amstel is okay. It's 13th. So at that point, going into kind of Dauphiné, where were you at? Were you thinking, I'm doing okay? You mentioned earlier it's a one-year contract. Where were you kind of mentally at that point leading into Dauphiné?
Yeah, so leading up to Dauphiné, I did my own team camp, basically, in Andorra. I met, I stayed with Magnus Cort. He had an apartment there. So does Nelson Paolo. So we did like a small training camp together, the three of us. We got a coach for the team who came up and did some good ride with us, or like behind us. So I was just building up for the tour, basically. So I didn't think I was in great shape because I didn't do any crazy efforts because altitude can be dangerous for that. So I just training, just riding, basically. So I didn't think I had like good shape to do any big results for Dauphiné. I wanted to, because Dauphiné was also like our selection race for the Olympics, or one of them. So like, it would be nice to show something there already, you know. And yeah, we came to the race. I came straight down from altitude, and I was just feeling good, and just got better and better each day. I think actually, I was actually in really good shape that race.
You were climbing really well, if I remember correctly, and in my head, you always seem to come good climbing wise around about Tour de France. And sometimes almost to the point where it is a surprise, because you're a bigger guy, you're a classics rider. But come kind of May, June, you always seem to start climbing really well.
Yeah, I think like it just comes because I always feel like a good training camp in May, focus a bit more on losing some weight for the climbs, because classics is just different. If you are 75, 74, it doesn't make a big difference. But if you are 70 or 71, it's of course easier going uphill. So yeah, I start to focus on that. So, and it just comes more easy with the summer comes, you know, going into summer, warmer weather. So yeah, but yeah, Dauphiné, I could climb, I sprinted a little bit, and yeah, I did everything, breakaways. It was a good race. It was nice to get that race feeling back in the legs, you know.
So then you go to the tour. Uran finishes 10th overall. You were in the breakaway on stage 19. What was your 3 weeks like?
No, it's tough. The tour is always super hard. Like I always go there to try and win a stage. this year I didn't come super close. I missed the last little bit, but I was a really good team helper. I think we supported Uran like really, really well. It's been my best tour in terms of like we made no mistakes. In the end, it was all about Uran's leg the last week. We had two bad days that cost him the podium. So we had we didn't have the best tour, but it could have been an awesome tour because we were like this close to win the Team GC, this close to go on the podium with him. So if that would have happened, we would have had like an awesome tour. But now we didn't get anything really. We got a top three with Magnus maybe and something like that, but that's what we came for. So obviously, look at the papers and the result, it was not great, but I really enjoyed my tour. Like, I mean, cool young guys, like with Bisiger, Jonas Rutsch, they are some crazy, crazy young guys, you know. And Rigo, being around him is always also fun. He's just so relaxed, but he's such a classy bike rider. So I had a really good tour, to be honest, in terms of like having fun, doing my job. Didn't get the result I wanted, but like I was happy with what I could do for the team. So yeah.
So you mentioned it there. You go trying to win a stage. So in a 3-week race like the Tour, there's maybe two stages, like maybe three, that kind of suit a breakaway, suits a rider of your style. Just how hard is it to target a win when you know that there's only 2 days really where you can take a win?
It's so hard. But the Tour is different from all other races. Everybody wants to win. And if one team hasn't done well, they might chase all day. And they might flick you that day, but a day that's supposed to be a breakaway day. Something like that. Like remember last year, there were so many breakaway days that was supposed to be good. But then the battle between Sam Bender and Peter Sagan, it ruined the whole race for people like me and Oliver Narsen and these guys, you know. We were so pissed. And when you have two or three chances to get in those breakaways, first you have to make them by not spending like too much because you also need it for the final. It's like a balance. Should I go full gas to go in the breakaway? And then, you know, it's a puzzle, to be honest. Unless you just have diamonds in your legs, then it's different.
So stage 19, I mean, classic. Everybody talks about it. It was going to be a big breakaway, a big fight for the break. And all of a sudden, a small, no offence to the riders in it, apart from maybe Mohoric, a small weakish break goes. I think there was a crash in the peloton. It goes and it looks like your chance is gone. And then all of a sudden, things happen, people chase, and boom, the race goes crazy.
Yeah, it was a mental day actually, because like you say, we thought the break would go and actually Quickstep would control for Mark's record and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, they stopped chasing and they didn't get any help. And then all of a sudden, people start to attack. Like, I think it was Sky who maybe started, like Gierkowski or something like that. And then all of a sudden, I just found myself in a breakaway of like 20, 25 riders maybe. And we were like going full because behind they were going full as well. And The funniest thing that day was for me, I think there were three or four movie star riders. And then when the break, all of a sudden, like Stuyven attacked, five people got dropped, and like three movie star, and I think Greg Van Avermaet and one or two Astana guys. Like, how could they fuck that up? But you know, it was because they didn't want to pull.
Yeah.
They were all sitting at the back. So, but you can never sit in the back when you're 20, 25 riders plus. It just flicks you, you know? So, yeah, I think that was funny. That was so funny.
And then when that break then kind of established, I remember watching on TV and it reminded me of a boxing match where people were just throwing punches left, right, left. It was crazy. There was a period of about, I don't know, 20, 30 kilometers where it was just everybody taking turns to attack. It must have been so hard to try and get that right.
It was unbelievable because there was like also these small little kickers. They were not long, but they were like really hard. And that's where my teammate got dropped because he was on some day actually, Jonas. But Jonas sometimes has too much power, so he just keeps attacking. And then one of these kickers come. And then yeah, I think it was maybe Nils Pollitt, who was actually crazy strong. Everybody could see it. Everybody knew it. So he attacks and then he got dropped, you know, and Nils got angry because everyone was following him because, but like we told him, Nils, you're so strong. Like, of course we're going to follow you when you attack, you know. And then Mohorda did this sneaky move where everybody was on the limit and we just never saw him again. So yeah, it was a hard day. I was so tired after. It was just full gas facing the last 50K. And before that, it was like another 50K going like full as well. You know, it was just a hard day. So,
but a great day. I think I assume those are the days that you really have been a bike rider.
It was awesome to be out in front in the Tour de France stage. It could have been my day, you know. So that's why I want to race the Tour, is because of those days. And yeah, it was awesome.
And then we have this post Tour de France period where you always seem to go well. Like you all this kind of, I think you've done Tour of Denmark after and things like that, but you seem to have very, very good legs in that kind of August period onwards. Why is it?
You tell me. I would really like to know so I can start like that next year, you know? I don't know. Maybe I just need a Grand Tour to get the diesel engine started. I don't know. I'm thinking about maybe doing the Giro next year, if that will start my engine a bit earlier, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think after the Tour, everything's a bit more loose. Like, you still train, but not as structured. You're still serious, but you maybe have one or two beers or glass of wine a bit more than usual. Maybe you just stress less, which sometimes makes you ride faster. I don't know. Or it could be just because, yeah, you did a Grand Tour, you've been serious, super on it the whole eight months of the year, you know, and all of a sudden it just clicks. I don't know, but I like it. It's super great, you know.
So you go to Italy and the Giro Toscana, you take the win, your first win for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
What was it like?
Unreal. Like, it was obviously a smaller race, but I didn't expect to win that day because it's a pretty hard day. The going up Mandasera twice is not for me, but I felt absolutely amazing that day. And I think that just gave me so much confidence for the next day, you know? So that was just one of the best weekends I've had on my bike, especially the way I won those two races. It's just like, I was just on it. Like, I was just, I could walk on water almost. It felt like that.
And Sabatini, you did something that most couldn't do, which was beat Colbrelli.
Yeah.
Especially in that post-Tour period where he was almost untouchable. I suppose the question which people would want to ask is, so 3.5 years between victories, was there a point where you were worried it wouldn't happen again?
Definitely. You know, cycling is such a hard sport, not just physical, but also mentally. And obviously, you lose more than you win. That's just statistic, but that's something you know and something you're getting used to. But not winning for like 1,000 days, that's a lot, you know? Because I race to win. That's why I ride my bike, not just to do 7 Grand Tours or 7 Tour de France in a row. Like, I couldn't give a damn, you know? Rather, would have done almost non-Tour de France and then won 100 other races, you know? So, yeah, obviously something you think about, and also something that I was, like, I knew it was in the back of my mind. So I started actually already, maybe it's a year ago now almost, since I started with a sports psychologist. And I think since I started with him, I talk a bit about more how I feel when I'm down, when I'm up. You know, it really helped me to talk to someone about these things. So that was a good decision, that's for sure.
I mean, your move to Dimension Data, NTT, whatever they were called at that point, you know, it wasn't a disaster. I mean, the first year, you had a very good post kind of Tour de France period as well. You had some very good results.
Yeah.
The Corona year was fucked up for everybody. Some people performed well, some people struggled a little bit. So it wasn't as if you did nothing, but as that, I suppose, watching it, it's easy for people to say, oh, it's okay, he'll come back.
Mm.
Michael Valgren, he's won 2 Amstel Golds, you know, he's going to win. But, you know, at that point, you know, the self-doubt, does it really creep in? And do you start questioning, am I good enough?
No, mm. Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I think I'm never gonna be a rider who wins 10 races a year. Like, if I can win 2 to 5 races a year, I'll be quite happy. But yeah, when you don't win for that long, it's just hard, especially when you start to get out of contract and all that stuff. And yeah, and then I think the Corona year was just a bad year for everybody, but it was especially really tough on me. Like, I'm not going to say, make some excuses, but I had my son that year. He was a super bad sleeper and stuff like that. It also didn't help for sure. So, yeah, it's also something good comes out of it. Like, I learned a lot of things about myself, about people around me who I can trust and stuff like that. So, yeah, there's never anything bad that's good for something, you know. So I learned a lot that year. I must say that.
People don't often talk about the impact of having children. I mean, from a father's point of view, it must be harder just to leave the house every day to go training when you've got a newborn baby. You know, that motivation of, I'm just a bike rider, I need to train. Mm. I would imagine you have to be quite selfish at times, which must be so much more difficult when you've got a child.
Oh, definitely. It's not easy, and it only gets harder because, to be fair, the first year of a newborn is not really interesting. It's just kind of like nice to cuddle, you know, or how you say it, but they don't give much back, you know. But you still love the little creature and you still want to be a part of it and see when he or her takes his first step or do his first laugh and stuff like that, you know. But at the same time, like, we are bike riders, we love it. Like, we also love to be a little bit of alone, to be out hunting, you know, like doing those hard efforts. So we know we're going to be top of Tartusberg the last time, you know, stuff like that. That's also what drives us. And basically also, I think, what our wives fall in love with, like our determination, our will to go out and train when it's like minus degrees in Denmark and stuff like that, you know. And I think as long as you have that, yeah, you can be a good bike rider. But when you start to lose that and you want to be a family father and stuff like that, then you can maybe still be a good bike rider, but I don't think you're going to win like 10 stages in the Tour. So there's for sure like a balance and some compromises. You have to figure out how you want to do it. And that's also something you have to learn when you get a baby, for sure.
And then you leave Italy, I imagine, full of confidence. You said walking on water. You go to the World Championships. You have a stunning race. Walk away, 3rd place. Just what was that day like?
Yeah, I said earlier that the week in Italy was probably my best week for my cycling career. But then that week came. I think that was even better. Like, the Worlds is maybe the biggest race for me. I don't know. I love World Championships. I love the whole build-up to it. I love being around the national team, the other Danish athletes, and I love coming back to see my old junior coach, my old under-23 coach, and just catch up and see the other juniors and stuff like that. It's just a bit special, you know? And then, like, being one of the older guys in the team, to give some of my advices to the other ones and feel like it's just special. And that race is something that everybody is watching. And if you win, you have a jersey for a whole year. You know, it'll just be amazing. So that was a really good day for me. Like, being 3rd, I hoped I could be on the podium before the race. But would you have asked me 2 months before, I was not even sure I was going to go, you know. So, yeah, unreal.
Well, the word coming out of the Danish camp before the race was that there was no team leader. There was no predetermined tactics like that. Was that bullshit or was it true?
No, 100% true. We had our plan. 5 leaders, 3-ish helpers. Like Mikkel Bjerg was the one who has to pull the whole day so we could get a good position in the peloton. The race just escalated much quicker than we anticipated.
Thanks to Remco.
Thanks to Remco. but yeah, then you can say Magnus, he shouldn't have gone with him, and Askren shouldn't have attacked and pulled super hard up the second couple climb. But then again, it made Italy like chase like motherfuckers, you know, and it cost them all of their helpers basically. So yeah, it's always easy to be like smart after the race and say what you should have done and what you shouldn't have done. But we're also unlucky. Mads Pedersen crashed twice. Honoré crashed really bad. Askren had bad stomach. Magnus Korb was just on a bad day. So it was up to me in the end, you know. So just me left. And I missed that first split. I was like, why, Michael, why? Then Askren was just showing how strong he is. You know, even though he had a bad day, he managed to get that gap down so I could jump across. So yeah, it's thanks to him and the team and my own legs that I'm having a third place that day here now. So yeah, that was some day.
That was a strong move when you jumped across. I think, am I right in thinking you were the only one who managed to get across?
Yeah.
How hard was that effort?
Too hard. Because you did obviously watch the race. So Askren, he closed the gap pretty much. Like he gets it short enough so I can jump across. But that's a moment when Remco is actually waiting for Wout van Aert and Jasper. So when they come up on the little kicker, he just starts to go full again, like a pull full gas. And that's when I jump. And behind me, Thijs Benoot and Campenaerts and maybe Matthews are trying to follow. They can't. I come up, a slightly crosswind. I'm the last guy, and I'm like just suffering so much. And I try to like you know to recover as quick as possible because next comes the Schmeichberg, a steep little kicker, you know. And I'm like, if I'm on the limit of it now and going on him on that climb, I will struggle. Luckily, I recovered and had a flip attack, and then luckily the other guys just let him go. But I think if the Belgians would have followed him and the Dutch guys, I would have been on the limit there. So luckily they let him go and they pulled him back in after. So yeah, it was a hard move to join that group. And then I just used the whole way into Leuven to try and recover behind Remco's TT, you know. So yeah.
Your record at Worlds is pretty special. I mean, 7th, 6th, 3rd. In the last 3 seasons. You see it there, it's, you know, one of your top 2 races of the season. Is it the length that makes you so... I mean, we've seen you before in Flanders, when the distance is long, you seem to, you know, go a bit better than some others. Is it the length? Is it the fact that it's post-tour? You know, why? How come you go so good?
I think it's 2 things. It's how it's raced, and the length. Like, I'm good in long distance races, but also normally world championships is more like a waiting game. So you wait a bit until you open up, where normal races now, or like stages, are 4 hours. The final starts maybe after 2 hours. And maybe I'm not ready for that in those normal races. But in the world, it's just like you wait until 5 hours before you open up for the first time, really. And I think maybe that makes me a bit more equal to some of the big hitters. And that's something I have to make or to be better at next year in the normal racing, to be ready like a lot earlier than at the Worlds, for instance. Like it's not a waiting game anymore. It's more like who comes first takes the prize. it's become totally different from what it was 3 or 4 years ago racing.
Yeah, thanks to Remco and Van Aert and Van der Poel and Alaphilippe.
Yeah.
We're just saying that we can open up so much earlier. When did your new contract get sorted out?
It did already under Dauphiné.
It was nice, secure feeling.
Yeah. It was super early. Like, we were in talk with the team, and all of a sudden I just get a message from my manager like, "Oh, hey, Michael, we got a contract, and are you happy?" I'm super happy. And then I signed straight away, you know, because I was happy at EF already before, and I didn't do any big results until before Dauphiné, or not even in Dauphiné. And just what they, like, they showed me that they believe in me, like, this 2 more years, and it just gave me another, like, confident boost, and that they actually really value me. That was quite nice, because even though I didn't do big result, I think I have big impact on the team as a rider, as a person. So that was super nice to be valued like that as well.
How was your first Roubaix?
Oh, mental. Like, I don't think it was a nice first edition. You know, if you have to do one, it would be nice to start this with a normal one just to see how that is. But I think that's already pretty crazy enough. Though I was scared. Like, I was really scared before the start. When we got into the race, it got better and better, and I felt fine. I was in the first group for a long time. But then I just lost it. I don't know. I couldn't stay focused. I got mud on my glass. I couldn't see a damn thing on the cobbles. I got scared, got dropped, came back, got dropped, got bad stomach, didn't come back, almost shat myself. And then I was like, nah, I'm going to stop this race. Yeah, it was.
I mean, obviously, you're normally focused on Amstel, Flanders, Liège, that type of race. Will you go back to it, Ruby?
Yes and no. Like, one, because I think I have some unfinished business to do, but also no, because I think it was just so crazy. Like, it's not, I didn't enjoy it, you know, like, maybe it was because of the conditions, but it might be raining again next year, you know. I didn't like that if you were breaking on the cobbles that you would crash. I don't like that I have to rely on somebody else not crashing, you know, because okay, then it would be easy just to hit the cobbles in the front, but that's also like a risk you got to take. So yeah, I don't know. Like, if I see the forecasts are good, I'll probably go. If not, then I'll stay home.
Looking at this winter ahead of next year, are you going to do anything different compared to previous seasons, or is it same old, same old?
Same old, same old, but with a bit of more structured training in some areas. Like, I'm going to train more structured in the gym. I always go to the gym, but I just go there and do whatever. This year I'm going to try and be more like, do the right things, the right reps, whatever. But other than that, it's going to be same old, same old.
And how's your running?
It's good. Really good, actually. I had a small break because, yeah, I was a bit stupid. I changed my insoles from my bike shoes to my running shoes. I thought I'd use the same. And all of a sudden, I got like so bad shin splints, I think it's called.
Yeah.
So I couldn't walk for a week on my vacation in Portugal. So I took a week off. Then I was running the other day. I was like, oh, I feel good. And then today I was running on the treadmill. Like a pace 3:45, I think, for just 4 kilometers. But I feel good now, so I'll probably do a good long one outside soon.
And one last question. Looking at next season, obviously, Tour de France and Denmark. I mean, what does that feel like? You know, the tour is going to start in your country. I mean, that must be pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's going to be unreal. Like, I've heard some of the things that they are planning to do with all the cities, you know, who put money in it, and it's going to be a big party, a big, big thing for the whole spectators, for us as a rider. It's going to be awesome. And yeah, that's actually a thing I'm going to work on as well. It's my TT. I'm going to Girona next week for a TT scan and position and to get that up to date. So I could probably go to the tour route in Denmark, not lose too much time on the TT, and go for a jersey in the beginning of the tour. You know, that's what the Tour de France in Denmark does to you.
Would be pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be unreal. That's a game changer.
And then it's just a shame that you've got quite a lot of competition from your fellow Danes, your Pedersens and your Asgreens.
Yeah, that's very true. But maybe that'll be my motivation to be the best Dane. That's also a good competition.
Maybe best they should get a special jersey, the best Danish.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Masvidt Smith now. So.
Well, Michael, thank you very much for giving up your time tonight to look back at your 2021 season, and wish you all the best next year.
You're welcome, and thank you.